The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We have reunited last year's selection team for the best non-fiction books of the year. They are Nadine O'Regan, who of course is a regular with us here on The Last Word. She's the arts editor of the Sunday Business Post, but also the Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, as we know, who's a very keen reader and has come in as usual with loads of books piled up that he's going to tell us about. Okay, and I'm going to start with you, Pascal. I have at the top of your list The Once and Future Liberal by Mark Lilla. What's that?
So this is a very slim book that was published during the year by an American professor and journalist called, as you said, Mark Lilla. And what he was seeking to do is try and explain why the Democratic Party are not doing as well as he thinks they should be doing in America. And he put forward the argument that the Democratic Party has become too consumed by issues of identity. And because they're so focused on issues of identity, like they have lost the ability to come up with a big argument to
when
get more people
outside. When you say issues of identity, what sort of things?
We were talking about issues. He would argue issues like feminism. He would argue about issues like black lives. He would give us an example of us.
But they're big issues.
They are big issues, but he would say because, and he would argue that because so much energy has gone into those particular matters, they've lost the ability to come up with a bigger argument to get America in its entirety behind the Democratic Party. And then what he does, he takes this argument a step further. He goes on to say that because the Democratic Party are so focused on these particular matters, they've actually become a conservative party, or they're similar to conservatives. Because, of course, conservatism in its purest way is all about the individual. And he argues that the Democrats have fallen into the trap of being so focused on what matters to particular individuals, they can't conceive of an argument, for example, to get white low-income workers to support them. And this book has driven larger parts of the kind of liberal Democratic Party in America apparently bonkers, but it's really well written. It's really short. It's a really slim book. I have it here. It's only around, it's 130 pages long, and it provides, it's a really provocative book. And I think.
And is it influencing your political thinking for Ireland?
No, not at the moment. Because our political failure, our political system has all kinds of difficulties and failures, which you and I regularly discuss. I think it has many strengths as well. And one of the strengths I increasingly think it has is that Irish politicians tend to be very close to their electorates in their entirety. And we have a political system that produces a number of broad church parties, such as my own and Fianna Fáil. And I think that makes it more difficult for us to fall into the kind of trap that Lilla is talking about.
Okay, here. There's another book I want to go to. It's your third choice, Dan. And actually, you mentioned it to me months ago when you were in here about something else. You mentioned it afterwards. And I only got it recently because I remembered it and knew you were coming in to do this. And it's another very slim book, but it's brilliant. On Tyranny by Timothy Snyder. Tell us about that.
I'd recommend this book to anybody who cares about how we look after democracies in a world that has lots of challenges and difficulties within us. And as you said, this is a really small book now, and Timothy Snyder is an American historian who's done a lot of work on Central and Eastern Europe, particularly after World War II. And in this book, he basically makes the point that democracy and democratic institutions are a lot more fragile than we think they are. And history is full of examples that shows us that we take democratic and political order for granted. And in taking it for granted, things happen that whittle away at us. And this is a slim book that argues for us to take the warnings of history perhaps a bit more seriously
and
than we do.
And apply it to Donald Trump as President of the United States.
He does.
He doesn't use Donald Trump's name that I can find in it, but he keeps saying about the presidency and the president.
And he relates it exactly to the state of American politics. And in that, it has a little bit in common with the first book we have talked about. But he really goes back into history and goes into how democratic institutions have been overthrown. So he makes the point that there is something precious about democracy. He makes the point about the need for balance and moderation when you put forward your arguments, and about don't taking it for granted that public opinion will automatically look after itself, that it has to be cared for, and that the argument always has to be put forward that democracy is something precious and democratic institutions are something precious.
Yeah, it's a book I would highly recommend. I'm going to read the Mark Little one hopefully over Christmas. Now, Nadine, let's bring you in with some of your choices.
Yeah, well, just on the point of maybe reflecting where we're at now, Rebecca Solnit has published a new book called The Mother of All Questions, Future Feminisms. And this is a collection of essays, most of which, in fairness, have been published previously. She's a very well-known author. She also writes for publications like Harper's. But it's a very interesting moment in time, I think, to read Rebecca Solnit, because she reflects on where we're at today in terms of feminism and in terms of the patriarchy as well. And she talks about how men are forced to, she quotes here, forced to kill off the emotional parts of themselves in order to conform to a sort of a patriarchal model that still exists today. There's an essay in this collection that's called A Short History of Silence. And she speaks about how to be rendered voiceless is to be dehumanized or excluded from one's humanity. And that this is a very important, I suppose, topic right now, because every time we see women being excluded from the narrative through silence, we get situations like, for example, the Harvey Weinsteins, or, for example, what's happening now with the Me Too debate, with women increasingly coming forward to add their voice. A lot of women spoke recently to say that they didn't think they should talk about abuses of power because they didn't think that one voice alone was relevant, but cumulatively their voices are being heard. And this is why I think this book is quite important now.
Another book that you have on your list, I wasn't here for the interview at the time, I was on holidays during the summer, Mark O'Connell's book, To Be a Machine.
Well, that's a very, very different...
You love this as well.
That's a wonderful book.
This is a very quirky, curious book by a very intellectual and very smart Irish author who also has written for the New Yorker blog and the New York Times. And if you're a fan of the likes of... It's a weird combo, but if you're a fan of John Ronson and Don DeLillo, you should really consider this book, because Mark O'Connell, essentially living in Dublin, started thinking about a group of men who believe that one day we will gain, and by the way, it is all men, who believe that we will one day gain immortality. And Mark decided to head off, go to the States, go around the place, go to Arizona, and interview these people who think that essentially they've a great term for it, that the body is a dead format. So like we need to be reinventing ourselves and putting bits of ourselves into technology that will enable us to live forever.
What did you like about this, Pascal?
It's so well written. This guy, it's the first time I've read this book. I think he's either going to be the new Louis or Paul Theroux of Ireland, or maybe both. It is really, it's about the, he comes up with he introduced me to a concept called transhumanism, which is about what's going to happen to the human body in the future. And that, it isn't pretty. And this book is all about it, and he tells it with a real quirky sense of humour.
Why is it not pretty?
There's all kinds of fusions between bodies and machines that I think we should reflect on outside of the festive period.
Okay, right. Okay.
That's why it's worth reading.
Right. There's another one. Sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, speaking of death, actually, and just ways to thwart death, if you haven't read a book by Margie O'Farrell called I Am, I Am, I Am, you should really give it a chance over Christmas.
Why?
It's a memoir, and she's a best-selling fiction author, but she decided to write this memoir, and it's about 17 brushes that she had with death. And you might imagine, hang on, she can't really have nearly died that many times or come that obviously close to death, but actually she has. She nearly died at the age of 8. She was diagnosed with encephalitis, which is kind of an inflammation of the brain. She also nearly died during childbirth. And then there's a horrific, the first chapter is horrific. She was hiking one time when she was 18 and she was abroad, and a man came up to her and seemed a little bit threatening, and he put binocular straps around her neck. Now, she escaped through being very smart, but 2 weeks later, that same man abducted someone else and that person died. And so that starts the book, and it starts with this terrible story, and then as the book goes through, it's this very wise reflective account, not just of her scrapes with death, but also of her account of life. And it's remarkably warm, wise, vivid, poignant. It's a great book.
I want to stay with you, Nadine, because one of my favourite interviews of the year was with Ruth Fitzmaurice. It happened not long before, unfortunately, her husband Simon died of motor neuron disease, but her book I Found My Tribe, I think, has been inspirational to so many people, her personal story of coping with his illness.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of Joan Didion's The Year of Magical Thinking, and it's a book that was culled from personal journeys that she collected after her husband Simon was diagnosed. He was diagnosed in 2008, given about 4 years to live, told that with motor neuron disease, each one of his nerve endings would fail one after another until he was confined in a wheelchair, until every part of him essentially gave up. But he had the good luck and the break to be put on a ventilator, which meant that he survived until October of this year. And in this book, Ruth Fitzmaurice describes how she, her brood of children with Simon, how they all managed to find the courage and the bravery to live in as best a way they could. And she found a lot of salvation through just going swimming, through connecting with her friends. And this book, it's so raw, and it's written kind of in scraps in a way. It's not necessarily the most sequential read, and it's just very memorable. Won an award at this year's Book Awards and thoroughly deserved it.
Now, Pascal, one more from you for the moment, and I'm interested to hear what you think of this. What Happened by Hillary Clinton? Now, I watched some of her television interviews. Very engaging interview, Graham Norton, of all people, on BBC. The book, I have at home, I haven't read it yet. My wife, Aileen, read it and was not particularly impressed by the sort of self-pity, as she saw an awful lot of it, although she thought there were times in it where there was a much nicer revealed of Hillary Clinton. What did you make of it all?
Well, I think the personal dimension of her public image was pretty obvious in the book. I think the way she writes about her family, her friends, this side of Hillary Clinton that, up to this point, I haven't encountered.
Maybe she should have made that clear during the campaign.
Well,
trainer,
you know,
is
what?
That possible?
For anybody who might say the book has some self-pity in it, of course it does. I mean, look what happened to her. You know, of course it has pity in it. Look at the process she went through. She went up against Barack Obama in 2008, a titanic contest for the Democratic nomination. Didn't win that. And then went through, an unprecedented election in modern politics and lost that. Not only does she recount the personal consequences of all of that, but there were two things in the book that really made me reflect on it and recommend it to lots of people. The first one is Hillary Clinton clearly is an extraordinary capable person. And to hear her talk about the doubts she had and the difficulties she had as a woman in politics is something that has to give all of us in public life pause for thought. If that's the way she felt as an unbelievably skilled and formidable politician and person. And then the second aspect of it is the concerns that she outlines, and it goes back a little bit to the Tim Snyder book that we talked about, the concerns that she outlined regarding the electoral process in America and forces that became involved in it, the role of money, the role of technology. I have to spend a little bit of time myself to, establish and form my own view, did all of these things actually happen? And of course, they're all being investigated in America at the moment, so we'll find out the answer, I hope, at some point.
In fairness, she was trying to apply money and technology to her own benefit as well.
She was, and I think there a point I've often been struck by is, a number of people, who are now very, very critical, for example, of the role of social media. We're not critical when Barack Obama was using social media to win presidential elections, one after another, where he made unprecedented use of social media and technology to win elections, particularly the 2012 election. But all that being said, the views that she outlines here in the book regarding the fusion between influence, money, and extraordinary levels of technology absolutely need to be investigated, and they are being investigated, and they were laid out in a kind of a forensic way in this book that I hadn't seen before. But all that being said, the main reason I would read it is a personal one. If somebody like her felt like she did in modern politics, all of us have to have a think about the kind of politics we're in.
Nadine, I want to go to you. Tell us about Mother Folklore.
Oh, nicely pronounced, Matt. You always have to be a little careful with that one. Yeah, that one is by Darragh O'Shea. And what I love about it is it's just a very kind of almost like hipster approach to the Irish language. It subtitles Dispatches from a Not-So-Dead Language. And it combines an element of autobiography, because the author, who actually the whole idea came about when he started a Twitter account in 2015 explaining the sometimes slightly nutty origins of Irish words or how they're translated into English. But it gives you his background, his schooling. He went to school through Irish. He had, you know, family who were all into Irish. But then at a certain point, he just became tired of the language, and then he saw how others felt. So this book is an attempt to both offer people some of the zanier words that you'll find translated, and then also explain what Irish means to people now. And actually, there's some moments in this book that you just think, in fairness, well done to him. There's a point where he compares Peg Sayers and how Peg Sayers was received to how Alanis Morissette was received in the 1990s. Because he says both of them were critically examined in a way
and
that
reviled.
Wasn't in a way that wasn't always fair. He's talking about Alanis Morissette's big hit, Ironic. And yeah, I mean, the guy really can write. It's fun. It's enjoyable. You dip in and out of it. Like, it's quite weighty in the sense that there's so many different explanations of words. For example, Brexit would be Sosamok, or he's got a few different versions of that.
And Sosamok, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's quite good.
Like that,
English
yeah.
out. There's loads of little words like that. And yeah, it's just very enjoyable. A very good one for the whole family. You can dip in and out of it. It's called Motherfuck Lore.
Pascal, I want to pick, you've two political biographies.
I've just realised how boring my books are in comparison to all of Martin's books. This is a really big worry. I go home at night and relax from a day in politics, read more books about politics. Nadine has such a variety of titles here.
Well, you have two political autobiographies.
I know,
that's
why I had to say this.
Yeah, Chris Patten and Richard Haass, two big heavyweight figures in world affairs in the last few decades.
Yeah, well, I'll begin with Chris Patten. This is his autobiography, that he published earlier on in the year called First Confessions, and it's a really enjoyable read and really relevant to Ireland, the UK and Europe at the moment for two reasons. The first one is Chris Patten's dad's family came from Roscommon, and his Irish identity and indeed his Catholicism are really fundamental to who he sees himself as being. So there's many chapters in the book about, for example, his time as a Minister of State in Northern Ireland, his time as chairing the Policing Commission in Northern Ireland. And it's a really big part of his identity. And given many of the challenges we're dealing with at the moment, it's very striking to read a British politician who had such a dimension, an Irish dimension to his political identity. And then the other part of it is that he was both a British and English and a really international politician. This was the man who was governor of Hong Kong. He was a commissioner for external affairs for the European Commission. And he's a really global outlook in this book. And it's really well written. Talking about his grandchildren, family life, Ireland. It's a nice read.
Richard Haass's book?
Richard Haass might be familiar to some of your listeners as well. Richard Haass was the special envoy to Northern Ireland a number of years ago for, I think it was, President Bush. And he is now runs a big think tank in America. And this book is about American foreign policy. And it's quite ironic. He's arguing that borders matter less and less, and that it's more and more difficult for countries to become powerful, because power is distributed now through their economy, through what they do in foreign policy and so on. And he juxtaposes all of that then with what is now happening in American politics.
Can I recommend a book for Pascal just to, you know, get away from some of the political tones?
For your first Christmas reading.
I have advised that comment, Nadine, haven't I?
Because I know he's a big music fan as well. And there's a book called Rock Bottom by Michael O'Dell. He's a Q contributing editor and he's interviewed all of the big people. He'd interviewed David Bowie and, of course, U2, Oasis, Shakira, everyone. And it's a personal story of how at a certain point in his life he starts realizing that there may be more to life than rock music, and perhaps he shouldn't spend all his time in fancy hotels hanging out with celebrities or in private planes with Bono. And he has a partner and a child, and it's his attempt to go to therapy, understand that maybe life isn't all about music and maybe he should be doing other things. But the joy and the anecdotes in this book, the crawling under tables after Oasis, it is pure escapism.
I'm halfway through this thing. I'm trying to figure out now if this is a compliment or an insult, Matt.
No. It's a compliment. No.
Should I be thanking you or should I be really worried?
No, because obviously you like your indie rock and your electronica. So I know
yes, LCD
that...
Yes, LCD Sound System, you're a big fan. I think that's one
yes.
of Nadine's picks for albums of the year next week.
Absolutely.
I'm one of mine as well.
Yep, great
so,
album.
No, light relief, Pascal.
Very
light
good.
Relief for the Christmas season. That's all I'm talking about.
I will give that a look. It is tremendous.
Rock bottom, Michael O'Dell.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. We're going to put all of these recommendations and a few more up on our website, todayfm.com, the last word page. But I think there's some really good ones there that I'm looking forward to having a chance to read over the Christmas period as well. Pascal Donoghue, Minister for Finance, in different capacity today. Nadine O'Regan from the Sunday Business Post, and Songs in the Key of Life on Today FM on a Sunday evening. Thank you very much.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.